Hello, Tom here. Behind me you can hear some atmosphere from the Tour de Lunsar, a bike race that took place recently in Sierra Leone. Today's episode mainly focuses on that race and the challenges of putting it on and the importance of it. And it hopefully will really take you away, as this music behind me is hopefully doing. It's quite a long piece, so if you want to listen to that, if you don't have much time, then skip forwards about 22 minutes into this episode and you can spend an hour at the Tour de Lunsar. All right, on with the show. Hello, I am Tom Wally and I'm with Lizzie Banks.
Hello, Tom. Good to be back.
Lizzie, where are you?
Well, Tom, I'm in a very secret location in Belgium, but I will tell you more about that later because I am back at the races.
Well, we played you in at the start of the show with a little bit of atmosphere from the Tour du Lunsar, which is in Sierra Leone, and we're going to be going back there very shortly. And it sounds like an extraordinary race. I really, really want you to listen to this. We'll spend about an hour in Sierra Leone covering the atmosphere of a very, very unique race. But Lizzie, you've been far afield as well, haven't you, recently?
Yeah, I have indeed. I've been over in the US, back at the Joe Martin stage race over there in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And yeah, that's where I started my comeback, actually, a few weeks ago now.
And how was it? I mean, Arkansas, I think... I don't know much about Arkansas as a place. What's the sort of experience out there? How would you characterize it?
Well, it's a really interesting place. It's grown a lot since I was last there in 2018. It's becoming a bit of a bike capital, actually. But whilst I was out there, I actually bumped into a friend of the podcast and I had a little bit of a chat with them about, well, you'll hear shortly, and also a little bit more about Arkansas. So maybe we should just go straight over to that. Well, I've just finished the Joe Martin stage race out here in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And, well, we had a really good race. We won with my teammate, Lauren Stevens. And I just bumped into a member of Henry Furness's Collective. Now, I'm sure you remember, Henry Furness has been on our podcast a couple of times. And always talking about these very exciting, very secret ideas that he can tell us those ideas, but he can't quite tell us what they actually are. But anyway, I bumped into a member of his collective out here. So introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Peter Abraham. I'm based in Los Angeles, but out in Fayetteville, Arkansas to watch the race today. And we bumped into each other.
And well, it's quite nice actually, because this is the podcast actually has a bit more of a story in your history of meeting Henry, doesn't it?
Yeah, so the reason that I know Henry Furness is because I heard him a couple years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, late 2020, on the cycling podcast, and tracked him down after that. And we sort of had the same idea, a continent apart, about is there a better way to make bikes?
And so, through the cycling podcast, you got in touch and you've created this collective. And you've got some, well, I don't know, you're allowed to tell us your exciting news about your...
Well, I don't know that it's that exciting, but, you know, for a couple of years, we've been working on the idea of 3D printing bicycle frames via additive manufacturing. And we have a whole collective of unbelievable experts from around Europe. I'm based in America. Henry has led the effort since the beginning, and we have our first rideable prototype now, which is very exciting.
So does that mean that, you know, there's going to be more bikes available maybe to the consumers in the next half a year?
Yeah, I think 6 months is a good estimate. We're just, you know, working on the next prototype now, and then that one, hopefully, then we can bring a few out to the public and show them to them.
Are you allowed to tell us the name yet?
We don't really have a name yet. It's sort of a collective. We're waiting for, you know, trademark
Maybe
approval.
You should call it the collective.
Yeah, you're right. It's a good point. That could work.
I'm really going to need some shares in this, or like at least a little cut. You know, I've brought you guys together, suggested the name.
There's no question that Lizzie gets a bunch of stock options in the business.
Well, I mean, like, What were you doing before you joined this collective, and so what brought you into this?
I'm based in Los Angeles. I have a marketing agency. I work for all different brands in sports, technology, and healthcare, but increasingly I do a lot of work in the bike business, and I myself have been a cyclist since I started racing in high school. And so we just saw there's a need in the bikes for a better way to make bikes that is more sustainable, more flexible to customer demands, where you could sort of say, hey, every bike is available every day because we can 3D print it, you know, the next day. And so
wouldn't that be nice? I need a bike tomorrow. Okay.
Right. And that's what we've been working on. My vision always from the beginning, even before I met Henry, was like, hey, you can order a bike on Monday. We'll print it on Tuesday and ship it to you on Thursday. We wouldn't start out quite that fast, but that's the idea. And we just feel like, you know, the possibility for that is there. And we just decided to build this collective around the idea.
And what brings you to Fayetteville, Arkansas? Because, I mean, I was here 5 years ago for Joe Moton Stage Race, and I came back, and it's beautiful here. It's amazing riding. I've been told that in Bentonville, there's some of the best mountain bike trails in the world. I've saved loads of pins on Google because I want to come back here and explore some of the incredible, you know, natural areas around here. But what are you doing here?
It's really amazing. I'm working on a project here, but I got here a few days early. I rode a gravel race yesterday in Bentonville called
Rule of Three,
which was so much fun and eccentric and cool. And what is happening in Bentonville is incredible. It's almost unprecedented. I think it's become the bike capital of North America already through the massive investment of Stuart and Tom Walton in bike infrastructure and mountain bike trails in particular. 400 miles of mountain bike trails that are beautiful, handcrafted. Now there's bike cafes, bike businesses, bike showrooms. Like, a whole bike culture has been built. And I think it's one of the most interesting areas in the United States, honestly, building an entire region on bike culture. That's never happened before.
Yeah, I mean, we've used a lot of the trails riding in and out of the city. We've been riding back from the races. We've always been utilizing those bike paths, and they're well built. You know, a lot of the bike paths, I'd say, particularly in the UK, they're narrow. They're not really big enough. Perhaps they're just painted onto the road. But here, the infrastructure seems to be very well developed, and a lot of it as well, so you can actually get to where you want to go. You come right into downtown on the bike paths, just like a really nice vibe, you know, wide paths. We did see a snake on the path yesterday but other than that, very safe. I'm amazed by, you know, I guess I didn't really know that much about Arkansas, having been here before, and it's got such a great vibe to it. It really does feel very friendly and welcoming to cyclists.
Yeah, and it's about to even upgrade again in Bentonville, because Walmart is sort of almost done with their new corporate campus, which is like 350 acres. There's almost 20,000 employees. They want to make it the most bike-friendly workplace in the United States. They want 10% of their employees, that's almost 2,000, commuting every day by bike. So not only is the campus going to be full of bike paths and bike parking areas, but then leading out, like, you know, rays from the sun, are going to be bike lanes and bike roads kind of going out in every direction from the campus. So it's amazing to see the intentional development around bicycles.
Well, I guess the last thing to ask is, did you bring your mountain bike with you?
I didn't bring it. I brought a gravel bike this time, but I usually borrow or rent a mountain bike, and I definitely get out on the mountain bike trails because they're amazing.
Well, Peter, great to bump into you and great to chat to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Racing and recording for the podcast, Lizzie. That is multitasking. Brilliant. Well done. How was the race?
Yeah, it was a really nice race, actually. A race that I, as you heard, did back in 2018. So it felt really nice to be back. It's a very, very different vibe to European races. More of a party atmosphere, but not quite as much of a party atmosphere as Sierra Leone, as you will hear later in Tom's amazing package from out there. And yeah, just great to be back. I mean, I spoke a little bit about this over on Cycling Podcast Feminin last week. Just so happy to be back, and it was just, we had a really great group of riders out there, and everybody was so encouraging. We all really committed to our roles, and yeah, we got the win. So it's not always that you win the bike race unless you're SD Works. And so yeah, to be able to go there to restart and to achieve our goals, it was pretty perfect, I'd say.
Well, you're on location once again, Lizzie, and you haven't told me yet. Well, I know where you are. But you, well, you're in an Airbnb, aren't you, basically? Tell me where you are. What are you
doing?
Yeah,
I'm in Leuven in Belgium. And I'm only a year and a half late for the World Championships. I was racing a couple of days ago over the weekend in the other side of Belgium, over in the west at Dwarsdorp de Westhoek, and I'm racing again this coming weekend just near Leuven in Aarschot to Diest at Dwarsdorp Hageland, which is a really nice race actually. Did the recon for it yesterday. Very chaotic, as all Belgian races are. Lots of gravel sectors, a few punchy climbs near the end. So really looking forward to that on Saturday, and good to be back with the European peloton as well.
Lizzie, well, I've never ridden a bike in Belgium, but I've always just thought, like, it looks like, honestly, the worst. I'm so surprised that it produces such great bike riders, because it looks like the most difficult place to train, like, on the planet.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to offend all Belgian people, but I find it quite difficult to train here. And usually I'm not really having to train here. I'm usually coming here, doing a kind of pre-race ride, a course recon, doing the race, and then coming home again. And I'm going to explain a little bit why we both feel like that. And it's because of the bike paths, which of course are brilliant. The one thing I love about being here is the culture is incredible. It's bike first. You know, anytime anybody comes to a junction, I'm so used to sort of overreacting as if the car isn't going to stop, and everybody just stops for you, and the bike path, you know, has the first priority. So it's a really nice place to ride. You know, you really feel looked after. But if you're trying to train here, it's a different story, because you also have to use the bike paths, and of course they're great safety wise but if you're trying to actually put the power down, it can be a bit tricky. So you have to find the roads that don't have bike paths, the smaller roads, or where I am, I'm just on the border of Wallonie. So I'm going to go down to Liège today, actually, and ride down there, because it's quite different, and also the terrain is very different. I also don't understand how both the Dutch and Belgian riders are quite so good. But I don't know, maybe it's us, Tom. I mean, it must be us.
It's definitely us. I mean, it's ideal preparation, you know, coming from the States on those massive wide roads and then landing in Belgium.
I know, it's about polar opposites, isn't it? Because, I mean, over in the US, the roads are so, so fast, because they're very smooth, they're very rolling, they're very wide. You know, you can just move up so much so easily. And the race I was doing on Sunday, it was as narrow as a bike path. Absolutely horrendous wind, flat as a pancake, really, really chaotic. So really polar opposites to the American race, actually. But I survived.
AJ
came fifth, so it was a good race.
Not bad. Lizzie, well, before we get on to Tour de l'Ansar, we should probably revisit a big bike race that both of us were sort of following through the podcast, the Giro. You were out in the States following the podcast through the Giro, following the Giro through the podcast. I was back here producing a lot of episodes. For the Giro, not normally that surprising when it comes to sort of tech stuff, but quite a few interesting things to come out of it. Not least, you know, Rog using a mountain bike chainring for the final time trial up the mountain. Did you say your friend did that, or?
Yeah, and it's interesting actually that I think the other teams didn't think of it, because, you know, we heard Larry Warbass on the Giro podcast saying, you know, he phoned back down the mountain to say you need smaller gears, because I think they were riding 39, 34 and it was just horrendously steep for such a long time, and a concrete road, and that, you know, saps the speed and the energy even more. But a friend of mine, he was going for the British record Everesting. I think he was, you know, very, very, either got it or very close.
Whereabouts did they do it?
Down in Bristol, on a really, really steep climb. Because obviously the steeper the climb, the less distance that you have to go.
Yeah, but you know, it was set, the record was set near where you used to live before that. So Sam from Set Valley Cycles. Out to, where is it? Not Whaley Bridge. Where am I thinking of? New Mills. So it was set in New Mills previously.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of steep climbs in the Peak District. So my friend used a mountain biking gear because, you know, he needed to, you know, if you're doing it for 7.5 hours, I think it was, you need to be able to spin that gear. Put a mountain bike cog on the back, small ring on the front, and it was perfect. As perfect as it can be for 7.5 hours of going up a very steep hill. So very bright idea by Jumbo Visma there. You know, it could potentially have been what cost Geraint Thomas the win as well. You know, having to push a bigger gear than you'd want up that really steep climb for a really long time, you're just going to die at the end.
Mm.
But also, one other thing that I spotted was... Well, have you heard of the Aero Bridge?
I have, because you've just sent me the link to it. I'm not really sure how a base layer can be aero. That's what's confusing me. Like, if it's under things, like, how is it aero?
So the Aero Bridge is a base layer that I spotted because some of the UAE riders. I wasn't really following the Giro very much on the TV. I was sort of glancing, catching some of the highlights, and I was living the Giro through the podcast, and I spotted the UAE jersey, and I thought, oh, that's weird, have they changed their jersey? Because on the sleeves, at the bottom of the sleeves, there seemed to be a small segment that was white with black pinstripe. Later, when Brandon McNulty won the 15th stage into Bergamo, I had a bit of a closer look, and I realized that actually what's happened is they've got a base layer underneath their jersey, and then they'd actually safety pinned around the edges of the bottom of the jersey in order to keep the base layer in place. So then this got me wondering, what on earth is this thing? And I looked it up, and it's called an Aero Bridge. There's a few companies making it. And if you've got a smooth jersey, which is actually not that common now, if you've got a jersey with a smooth fabric and you put this underneath, it can reduce, you know, the number of watts that you have to put out at 40 kilometers an hour or something by about 10 watts. It's really quite significant. And in the time trial, we actually saw Geraint Thomas using it. So if you imagine a sports bra, it's like a sports bra, but with sleeves added to it. And interestingly, you might be able to look back and see this. Geraint Thomas had one of these on, but he'd actually cut out the majority of the middle bit, so it wasn't as obvious to see, because obviously, you know, with a female cyclist, you expect to see a sports bra underneath. With a male cyclist, if you see something like that, you kind of immediately, you think, what is it? And they aren't sponsor correct. So I think Geraint Thomas had also cut out the bit with the sponsor's name on it as well. So yeah, it's something that's obviously being used in the peloton. It's something that I looked back, and it was actually registered on the list of equipment that you have to give to the UCI for the Olympics.
Right.
It was actually used back at the Olympics as well, but I couldn't find out which team it was used for. So that's quite interesting, because you're not allowed to kind of use a ridged material in a jersey. It's been banned. It has to be part of the fabric. So I was quite surprised that this is allowed, because it's a base layer, because it's underneath the fabric. I wonder if it'll get banned.
Well, listen, once it gets banned, then people will just start doing like some kind of extreme body modification, won't they? And having like ridges inserted under their skin or something.
Yeah.
That's the
sewing your skin together.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
UCI.
But it's interesting. I mean, there's quite a lot of teams using it. Human Powered Health using it as well.
I did see it actually. I did see it, but it's funny because I watch a lot of football as well, and a lot of the footballers wear like a crop top underneath. But it's for data. It collects data. There's lots of sensors on it and stuff like that. So that's what I thought I was looking at, but I'm glad you dug into that. From high tech, should we go to sort of a more low tech? Oh, before we should mention, yeah. Did you know, guys, that Lizzie Banks has got, she's a proper cyclist because she has a fan club. And I don't think you can be a proper pro cyclist without a fan club.
I don't know if I have a fan club, Tom, but I do have a fan.
So Lizzie's holding up Lizzie's fan club. I'm going to refer to it as a fan club. They've given you a mug. That is a beauty. Is that a Stacey Snyder mug?
This is not a Stacey Snyder mug. It's not quite as high tech. It's I've got a mug with my face printed on it 4 times.
Yeah.
My Giro win, second Giro win, headshot from this year, Worlds at Imola, and I think that's Tvarstor Vlaanderen, which was my last race last year. And I've also got a box of chocolates. Each chocolate has a picture of my face on it, Tom. So I haven't risen to the dizzy heights of are getting a pillow with your face on it, which is the other thing that is okay. So that the mug and the chocolates are, you know, from one Belgian fan, and then there's the pillow, which is another specific Belgian fan. So yeah, I have at least one fan in Belgium. So if that constitutes a fan club, then yeah.
Well, I'm gonna push it now. We need a proper organised Lizzie Banks fan club. I'm happy to do some of the admin, but we you know, it needs to be proper. We need a designated corner when you're at a race like the Giro, for instance. You know, we need a designated corner. We need
bring
some,
your own cat.
Yeah, so we need a designated corner. We need to coordinate our outfits. We probably need a chant for you as well, Lizzie. So listen, I'm going to leave that open to any listeners who want to join me in the Lizzie Banks fan club. Right. Lizzie, while we were watching the Giro, before the Giro took place, or I might have actually crossed over the Giro, there was another big race taking place, but in Sierra Leone, in Africa, and it's a race that I was only slightly familiar with, but they are supported by Science in Sport, who also support the cycling podcast. The race is called the Tour de l'Ansar, and luckily we had Oscar on the ground over at the race, and I spoke to him a few times from Sierra Leone and followed the race through him, and it just opened my eyes to another world of cycling. And well, listen, I'm just going to play you. So Oscar was at the race. We're going to hear from some of the riders, some of the sponsors, and some of the fans. And this, just let this take you away. So you hear us talk a lot on this podcast about Science in Sport and the support that they give us to keep the cycling podcast on the road. It's not just us that Science in Sport support. They've also been supporting a race, a very important race, and a very unique race that takes place in Sierra Leone. It's called the Tour de l'Ansar. Now, Oscar Scarsbrook, who is media manager with the Human Powered Health team, is also a media manager for the Tour de l'Ansar. And over the course of the race, which took place in April, I caught up regularly with Oscar to find out more about the race, Sierra Leone as a country, the cycling scene out there, and why the Tour de l'Ansar is so important. But first, we're going to hear from Science in Sport CEO Stephen Moon on how and why Science in Sport got involved with the Tour de l'Ansar in the first place.
Yeah, it was one of those cyclings, a small world events, really. On my personal social feed, I got a message from a young man called Tennessee Dixon in Sierra Leone, and he was actually asking me for ideas on how he could get riding kit out there to Sierra Leone. I didn't think a lot of it, and then I went and looked at his social feed, and I went and looked at his club's social feed, and I saw riders with a novel way of dealing with punches. They would tie off the inner tube with string and then refit it with string. And yeah, that led me to do something personally, actually, outside of SIS. I set up a crowd fund, and we raised a reasonable amount of money to send inner tubes and other bits of kit out to Sierra Leone. And obviously I used some trade contacts to make sure we got it at a very keen price, but it started through that. So one of the teams racing in the Tour de l'Ansar just reached out to me socially. I kept chatting to Tennessee, and then the guy behind Tour de l'Ansar, Kareem, also got in touch because he was very helpful with logistics. So you just listen carefully to the dedication of these riders, juniors, women and men. You listen carefully to the dedication, and I just thought any way we could help would probably help them. So we initially sent off quite a large quantity of nutrition, and the race wasn't even in our minds right then. So we got some nutrition out because we thought it would help people learn how to ride longer distances. And we then started to understand the real challenge of the scene in Sierra Leone, you know, the whole the whole concept of how you get things through customs and into the country, it became apparent that not only was this riding community riding on bad roads with bad kit, but also getting any kind of material through to them was not straightforward. So, in our usual science in sport way, being stubborn, we then doubled down and committed to get more and more nutrition and other bits of kit through to them. And it was a while after we got involved in the race.
Basically, after the American War of Independence, there was a lot of African-Americans, formerly enslaved African-Americans, who then sort of gained their freedom by fighting for the British.
One thing we did face, by the way, is a lot of blackouts. And that's why this first conversation between Oscar and I is recorded on a bit of a scratchy telephone, but it does get better.
They settled sort of back in Sierra Leone after the war. They essentially came to the town and city and named it Freetown. There are people who were already living here. They are basically the descendants of those settlers. Into the city centre, and it really is like the noise, the sounds, the smells, the sights. It's incredible. The wider context of the race is that Sierra Leone is the fifth poorest country in the world. It's something that comes across very obviously straight away when you're here. It's the average age is 19. And the sort of life expectancy and the life expectancy is up in the high 50s. And so there are a lot of young people here. You're really struck by how many young people are in the population and they're sort of just going about their day, and there's not many job opportunities and not a huge amount of working opportunities for those young people. And so that sort of brings us to the context of the bike race, and which happens up in Lunsar, which is north of here. Or as I say, because it's a circle, it's a bit kind of difficult to gauge the direction. It's sort of like ever so slightly northeast of here, and it's a small sort of rural mining community. And essentially, the mines are still there, but it's kind of certainly they've had their heyday, and so the opportunities in the community aren't what they used to be, as little as they were. And so the organizer of the race and the organizer of the local team in Lunsar cycling team and the total Lunsar is a guy called Karim Kamara, who is sort of, we know him, and he's known to everyone as Stylish, which is his nickname. And he sort of started the project about 10 years ago, and he has a bike shop of his own in Lunsar called the Village Bicycle Project. 10 years ago, he basically saw the power of having a uniformed race and having opportunities for kids to ride their bikes and exercise and to look for something bigger and sort of compete on a larger scale.
Well, it all started with my passion, because when I came to Lunsar and there were new cyclists and nobody like doing competitive cycling. Good evening, everyone. My name is Abdul Karim Kamara, aka Stylish, the CEO and founder of the Toddy Lunsar Bicycle Freestyle. So they give me the name Stylish because like I was the only one in Sierra Leone doing that. So there comes my name. I started chasing school sports organizers to, you know, at least include cycling in their sporting events. So they started doing that, more especially in my school. I participated and there was no one competing against me. So I am the only one competing against myself. Then later I decided to step down and like trying to mentor young boys and girls to see like, hey, you can go into cycling. I can provide the bikes by building mountain bikes to hybrids and hybrids to road bikes so that they can race. Because like even my bike that I was racing with was a mountain bike, and it was the best bike in the world, you know. So with that, like, you know, I put that aside, then bringing them to the exposure of cycling, they started racing competitively in the school sport meet, and like before finally I started doing the Tour de Lunsar. We have got many students racing in the schools and they want to get exposure outside of their schools in the community and the country at large. So that's where there comes my name, Stylish. Yeah, and there comes the Tour de Lons I started.
You ran for a decade, and about three, four years ago, Science and Sport came on board, and that, and Stylish, I was speaking to him yesterday, he sort of defines it in two ways. He says, we had the 7 or 8 years before the Science and Sport sponsorship, and he calls it now the big race. Now we have the big Tour de Lons.
The first edition was really rough because there was no money, nothing absolutely. Until the fourth edition, there was nothing absolutely. It was like a dream for me and everyone, like more especially with the boys that we started to see that it goes year by year, year by year. And, more especially in the second or third year, like with Village Bicycle Project, we are like the only charity organization shipping used bikes to Sierra Leone, but we are only shipping mountain bikes. You know, when I came involved, and like I said, okay, now we want road bikes because I'm involved with cycling, and I have many boys that are cycling. They want to go into racing too. If you can start sending road bikes, that could be really nice. So with that, here it comes, grow year by year. With Village Bicycle Project, they started putting some like 20 to 30 years old bikes, though they are not needed, but they are still like fitting our request, like because they are still road bikes. So there comes, we take it from that point to this level where we are now. And with the big support of SIS Science and Sports, today we are almost in the bigger picture, though we are aiming to do the biggest race in West Africa, like where we can host 10 or 20 nations in one platform, which is cycling.
It starts tomorrow, and it's a five-day event. So on the first day, we have a junior race and a women's race. And the junior race is actually the biggest race in the biggest event in the race. I mean, it's 40 riders, 40, 50 riders doing it this year. And that's sort of, it's very exciting because it's the next generation of these West African cyclists. And we've been doing it I've been working on the project for 3-4 years now. And you do see the progression. It's really, really quite exciting to see that progression through the ranks. I was hanging out with a guy yesterday called Ibrahim Kamara. Last year he won the junior race, and this year he's racing in the seniors. He's an amazing, amazing athlete. And you look at him and you think, yeah, this kid's a cyclist. I mean, he's a little stick of nothing. And if you put him on a climb, and this guy will fly. I'm telling you, like, he rides 96 kilometers to and from school each week, which is just, I'm just mind blowing to me. And, he has an incredible grasp of his cycling knowledge.
Junior Harfield. Much like Harfield. Oh, I want to be like him. I want to ride like him. I want to sit on my bike like him. I don't know, maybe.
And then we have a four-day senior men's event, which sort of goes to and from places around Lonsar and all the way to finish, basically on the same finishing straight in Lonsar.
Well, it means a lot for the young kids here because they know nothing about bikes. And for me, not only in teaching them how to ride with the bike shop, we teach them skills, and also teach them about racing, like building both two careers on them. Example to me, I came from a poor family, and with what I'm doing, I'm able to support myself, then even support people internally and externally. So supporting people like Edwards, it reflects to me as an example. If coming from a family with no hope, then living in the streets, getting an exposure to drugs, theft and like many other things. So it gives me the inspiration to reflect from my memory where I came from to say drugs is not good, and more especially for Africa. I see it's as of no hope for Edward and the other boys. Like, you know, cycling is the best platform for them to change, and me as a mentor to them, they can take me as an example, and I always check to see how best they can, you know, go out of this, you know, give them stipend, train them skills. They always work in the bike shop, and the next thing is to see them go to school so that it can be like a sustainable inspiration to them.
My name is Edward Cisse. I got contact with Stylish because I met with some friends that we are doing drugs deal. So I was smoking drugs, involving myself in bad life, so I got sick. So one day, Stylish met me on the street, sitting lowly. So he come and asked me what happened to me. So I said, I'm feeling sick. So he assisted me with some money and take me to the hospital for treatment. After that, he advised me to stop taking drugs, so I stick to his advice. So when I stop right now, I'm feeling better. Although right now I'm not too that good, but it's better than before. And he usually used to help me, give me food, give me money, give me bicycle to ride, because I do walk on the road. So I when I walk too long distance, I can feel pain. So when I request to him for bicycle, he give me a brand new bike. And any month, he used to give me money to eat. He assist me. So he's a very great man and good man. I love people like Stylish.
My hope is to see the science and sports of the Lone Star and bringing Sierra Leone to the bigger picture, wherein we can be presented in the World Championship. You know, we can be presented in the Tour de France. You know, we can be presented in the biggest cycling platform around the world.
I'm Abdul Hassan Kamara. I am the organizer for the tourism and cultural activities for the Tour de Lone Star. We are very much impressed over the starting of the 2023 edition, and we are highly impressed over the turnout, and we wish that this entire activity that will be last for 5 days and will be going with a very successful ending. Honestly, this is not only for Lone Star, but it's as a result of it is important as a nation, because Sierra Leone have never been experienced in this kind of activity. And not until the intervention of Abdul Karim Kamara with Stylish, the founder, who makes bicycle to be well known here in Sierra Leone. Before this time, bicycle program was just like a child's play. But today, it is as important as having a vehicle here in Sierra Leone.
In Sierra Leone, the female team is, we lack of female riders. So I decided to open a female club by the name of Ubuntu, because I'm just going to organize a female team for maybe next year or any other tour. All thanks and praise. I feel so glad, even though I was not expecting this position, because last week I was in Ghana, so I did not bring my bike. I borrowed this bike yesterday. So from since week ago, I'm not riding. I don't have bike because the airport, they told me for me to pay $200 for my bike. So I cannot afford that money or that moment. So I need to leave my bike and come back to Sierra Leone. So as soon as I come, I don't have nowhere to borrow my bike. So it's only yesterday, late in the day, I borrowed someone's bike and I said, let me compete. Yeah, but I well appreciated with the position. The biggest challenge and difficulties is bike. We lack of bike, especially my team, Ubuntu. We lack of bike. Even my teammate was there crying. I said, what happened? I think she got crashed and her bike was giving her problem. But me too, it's the same thing, but I just cope up. Even though it's not really easy, but I just manage, yeah.
Whenever we stage the event Tour de Lone Star, we have plenty of women and juniors that want to take part. But there is no way we can do a 2 days bike race for them. That is one. We are only having the finance and even little finances to do like a 1 day race for them. And the challenge is that we can't even stage bigger prizes for them. So it is very disparative to us. Like, we are looking at the bigger picture, but the gap between that is finance, you know, and like we haven't requests from many other the countries around the world. Like many women want to come and cycling, but like looking at those gaps, it makes us to see it like a challenge to have a imperative aspect of bringing that to a bigger picture. But however, we are very happy for the support of the science and sport to do at least a one-day race or one-day race for both junior and female.
My name is Aisita S. Monde, and I've been cycling for over 8 years now. It means a lot, because since I was a kid, my aim was to ride a bicycle. So I feel proud when I became a champion since 2016 up to this time. Unless I stop riding, that's all.
My name's Roxanne. I live and work in Sierra Leone most of the time, and sometimes in the UK. I work for Reseed, which is an NGO which has sustainable livelihoods programs, which is development jargon for employment and income generation for Sierra Leoneans. We pretty much only work in Marampa and the Port Loko district, which is Lunsa, and where the Tour de Lunsa is. I support Stylish, who's Kareem, with everything under the sun. I guess if I was going to put it on my CV, I'd say operations and logistics and general chaos, and kind of try to support him. It's a really crazy tour, and Sierra Leone's a really crazy, hectic place, and it's really challenging. And for me, the best way that I can support Kareem is trying to take stuff off his plate. The most rewarding thing about the Tour de Lunsa is actually a really hard question to answer, because I don't know how to put it into words, because it is actually really tough. So yes, I work it, I volunteer at it, and I rode the women's race this year, and I ride for Lunsa cycling team, because that's where I live in Sierra Leone. I don't know if you can hear my voice, but I feel emotional just thinking about like the juniors and the young women that I ride with having the opportunity to take part. It's really hard to explain if you haven't been to. I think Sierra Leone ranks the third lowest or like third poorest country in the world, and it's definitely the poorest country in the world that isn't in a current state of war. I think it's its actual like HDI index, or yeah, Human Development Index ranking. We're talking like one of our juniors rode without shoes because his trainers ripped and he only had slippers, and yeah, stuff like that. I'm not really answering the question, but to give young people or anyone in Sierra Leone the opportunity to be part of something is, I don't know, it makes your skin tingle. When the Lunsa cycling team, like we host, we try our best to support our riders in a way that maybe a European club might experience, but in a very basic way. So we like essentially put on like pre-race camp, which is Lunsa cycling team A and B. So 14 riders hanging out in a house. They're all sleeping on bits of cardboard and like thin bits of foam, and kind of like getting to know each other and train and stuff. But and you go and visit them like in the evening. Like I try and go when they're on camp, it's like the 2 weeks before the tour, try and like go every day after work or after training, or in like even like late at night to say hi, like how's it going, do you have everything, as much as you can provide it. And you like look at some of these young boys and you think, they don't know it yet, but this is genuinely probably some of the best days of their entire lives. And it makes you feel so privileged, and it makes you feel sad that's true, but it also makes you so happy that even in a tiny, tiny way, you know, like when they're older and, you know, it's hard, life is hard in Sierra Leone for a lot of people, maybe they'll look back and be like, I was part of something really cool, I got to ride in this race. You know, it's a story that they'll tell their children. You know, I think if you grew up in Europe or the US, you don't realise that kind of privilege, that we have that offered to us every day when we go to school, to be part of a swimming gala or anything, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, for me, I don't. If only one person in Sierra Leone gains some sort of positive experience from the tour, that means it's worth every single penny invested.
Well, we all know that cycling's like a very, you know, talent's quite easy to find, but cycling's a very expensive sport, and you've already said you're in the sort of the fifth poorest country in the world. So, you know, what are these riders riding? Where do they get their equipment and their kit from? You know, I mean, I guess there's quite a bit of disparity and unrecognisable maybe from a European race.
I mean, so the majority of the kit is donated, and some of the, what makes some of the images taken by Matt so compelling and so interesting to see is you can see where the kits are from. You know, you can last year, for example, we got a big donation from Grace Brown of her Team Australia kit. And both of the leading riders, the leading women who raced for the victory, were both in head-to-toe Australian national kit. And it's really awesome because it's like it's this very obvious link for the race to outside racing. For example, Dan Martin's given a load of donations, and so, you know, you turn up and there's guys in Israel Premier Tech shorts, for example. Lachlan Morton gave a huge donation of kit a couple of years ago during COVID, and so you've got guys in EF kit from a couple of years ago, EF shorts, and there's guys who wear, you know, Team USA kit and UAE Emirates kit, and it's really, as a result, it creates this peloton where you have all these guys wearing the kits of the best, you know, the best teams in the world, the best riders in the world. And that gives a real novel look to the race. Most of the teams now are in a position where they have kits themselves and they've been given, you know, donations of kits, but you can't, you know, that doesn't come from Sierra Leone. No, there's no cycling kit being made in Sierra Leone. There's not many bikes being made in Sierra Leone. Everything's donated, comes over on ships. And that's when you have, you know, shops. There's shops in Freetown, bike shop in Freetown, big bike shop in Freetown, Karim's in Lunsa. And that's where these bike shops really become pillars and hearts of the sport.
So my name is Ezia Fakakumokolo, but people call me Ziffy, my Ziffy. I will be 57 in October. As an athlete, you give the age of the year, so that's 57. Well, very, very exciting. Being my first kind of competitive riding. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully, I don't get dropped. So I currently use, it's the Enigma, the titanium. It's kind of like 2 years old. The reason I use the titanium is sort of like the carbon as well, but a bit stronger, in that it doesn't crack easily. And then I've got the carbon forks and handlebars and everything else. But it's good for, it's an endurance bike, and I like to use it in Africa, you know, all over like Nigeria, anywhere else, because of the road. Yeah.
My name is Usman Trumpet Kaloko, normally called OTK, and I'm 27 years old. Well, a bike means a lot to me. Like, it's my parents now. I love it. It's my wife. It's my everything. And it means a great thing to me and great impact to me. And it makes me a great man in Lone Sac because, like, for Lone Sac now, I'm the most famous cyclist and everybody's looking up to me. So it's a great pleasure for me to be in the cycling team. Yeah, like, as a teenager, I have a lot of stressful, like, a drug misuse, alcohol. But between I come in a cycling sport, it changed my expression because it doesn't go with me that way to take drug or to drink alcohol. I only just focus on cycling and I hope so one day cycling will change my story.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I've got you loud and clear, buddy.
Awesome. Right, so I'm in this concrete structure, which Matt says has been being built over the last couple of years. It's in the centre of a roundabout. And this is sort of where, I mean, literally every day, hundreds of people from Lone Sac come and watch from this concrete spot. I've been up there myself. The roof is a little bit precarious. I was told the first time up, don't stand on the wood or you'll fall through. So it is a little bit precarious, but it's an amazing structure. And as I say, like, I literally hundreds of people come and watch from this spot, and it's amazing to see. I mean, it's comparable to any bike race I've been to, and if not better than any bike race that I've been to on the pro circuit.
Well, let's listen. I mean, I've been following the race through you. First of all, I mean, let's just get, I mean, so you were, you know, when we last spoke, you were fresh into the country. What have your experiences of Sierra Leone been since the race kicked off?
It's been wholly positive. I mean, nicer people you won't meet anywhere. I mean, they're very, very, very accommodating, as you can imagine, and they're super, super friendly, anything you need. And here, it's, dare I say, I mean, obviously my perspective is as a white man and as a guest of the race coming into
this.
Yeah,
and also, you've got a perspective of having been on many bike races in Europe before. Mm. So I really am interested in that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, if a spoonful of this vibe, of this passion, of this of this cycling culture over here was put into a European bike race, I mean, it would be significantly, significantly better. I mean, you know, how many races do you go to? Yeah, sure, I know we have the electricity of the Belgian fans and everything, but how many races do you go to where there's a brass band at the start and all the riders are dancing on the start line? I mean, it's, and then, you know, you might think, they're not in the competitive spirit. They're not in the, you know, fighting spirit. 10 minutes later, they're on their bikes and they are absolutely flying and they are burying themselves on these bikes in 38 degree heat. It's unlike any race I've been to. And it's just, it was beautiful to see. So the juniors and women's racing was sort of kicked off the action. The juniors race first. It's actually the biggest field. And it's very, I was standing on top of said large concrete structure to sort of get an overview of the field. And it's a large peloton of about 60 riders. And for here, that is very, very large. They're kids ranging from 11 up to 18. So, you know, they're all in the same race. There's no real age categorization. They're sort of on real cobbled together bikes. I mean, pretty much every single rider in that race you think needs a bike fit, essentially. But it's amazing to see. And yeah, so the juniors race was won by a young rider called Abdul Rahman Karoma. And the thing about the juniors races, and it's got a lot of publicity over the last couple of days, and you may have seen, is that the vast majority of the junior riders were racing in kit donated by the Hayter brothers and their father, Tim Hayter.
Hello, Abu, what's my name? And I'm 20 years old.
Awesome. How long have you been racing?
5 years.
5 years.
Yeah, since 2019.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
How have you improved over that 5 years? Have you seen yourself improving with the more riding you do?
Yeah, because like in 2019, I came in ninth, the year that I started cycling. So like all the past years, 2020, 2021, I'm in the first five position. So like I think I'm improving. Yeah.
how important is the race for you?
Well, how important the race is for me, like, I want to achieve my goal. So, like, I have to take it serious. I think any race is important to me. So, like, I cannot neglect any race. Yeah.
And you're wearing, a lot of you guys are wearing GB kit, donated by two professional riders. Yeah. What does it mean to be wearing such good cycling kit in this race and be getting donations like this?
Well, it means to for us to be like them. So, like, I believe when they donate their jersey to us, I think we should do the same thing like them. So, like, I think that is our main motive and intention for that. Yeah.
The women's then came later in the day in a similar format, similar course. And Deborah Conter was sort of always goes into these races as the favorite. She's from her own women's team called Team Ubuntu. And she was, she kind of raced very intelligently, raced within herself at the start and was getting others to do the work for her. And then two women, Roxanne Hargreaves, who rides for Lundsdale Cycling Team and works for a local charity here, and a girl called Blessing from C2C, another local club, both broke away and sort of took the racing to the others. And so that sort of split up quicker because it was a slightly smaller field. But yeah, I mean, that came down to the line and Roxanne Hargreaves won in a two-up sprint.
I will tell you the journey of some generously last-minute donated socks for the... yeah, socks. Very important to have matching socks for the LCT A team. Good. Like, imagine as a rider who has nothing to once a year, you probably might get some kit. And these guys, like, you know, psychologically, it's nice to be matching. And they were like, rocks, please get us some matching socks. And I was like, guys, there's no matching socks in Sierra Leone. Trust me, if I could find them, I would have found them. So I messaged Africa Rising. It was like, there's a guy based in London. And it's like, do you happen to have six pairs of matching socks? I know someone who's flying on Friday. The race starts on Wednesday. You live in Angel. Like, I think there's space in a suitcase. And he was like, give me 2 hours. He's like, yeah, I've got you some socks. I'm like, where are they? And he's like, they're at the Giant shop in Camden. So I called my dad and was like, Dad, are you doing anything today? Because I kind of need you to go to Camden. My dad lives in South London. Can you go to Camden, pick up some socks, take them to Swiss Cottage to basically a finance director of another NGO, of someone I know, drop them off to this stranger. This stranger's going to fly tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. Dad, so I kind of need you to go, like, now. Can you just stop sitting around reading the newspaper and go and get these? This is all for six pairs of matching socks. So just as well, he's got a free travel card, yeah? And so he goes Swiss. So first of all, he goes to Camden. Then my dad's a cyclist, so he's enjoying his nice day out. He's like, I've just come back from my ride. I'll go straight away. He goes on Wednesday morning coffee rides. So just come back from my Wednesday morning coffee ride. Goes to Camden, goes to Swiss Cottage, drops this package to essentially a stranger. Imagine how many WhatsApp messages this is taking of my time, my dad's time, this other really nice woman from this other NGO's time. Then the socks go in her suitcase and they go to Lungi to Freetown, where then they go to Port Loko. And then on my training ride on Saturday morning, I coordinated with them who were going on a project visit in their vehicle. They passed us on our NGO car, and essentially passed them out in a Sainsbury's bag out of the window. And so now I've got six pairs of matching socks in my bib pocket. And then the LCT A team got to have six pairs of matching socks, and that's the journey of a pair of socks. Imagine when it's like two suitcases full of kit. An extra suitcase to fly to Sierra Leone is 90 quid, you know, so on Wiggle or whatever, that's not even a pair of decent bib shorts, but that is, you know, like, I pay for it. So if someone donates kit, it's got to be shipped, a decent sized shipping box, so you're talking like like 2 meters by 1 meter shipping box, which is there's a lot of kit. It's £170, and that's not including again my dad going to the shipping place and dropping off and packing the box, and that whoever donated the kit getting it to South London to sit in my parents' hallway for 2 weeks. You ship it to, so you get shipped to Freetown, and we're based in Lunsar, and that's 60 litres of fuel to go and pick it up. Who pays for the fuel? Again, this is all kind of things at home that you just don't really think about, but who's paying for that fuel to go and pick up this bike box? And then the person who just wanted the kit donation, who gave the kit donation, they want it distributed across clubs across the country, which is totally fair enough. You don't want Lunsar cycling team to get everything. But who's going to pay for the fuel and that time to organise which club's getting which kit? And then, like, we sent some kit specifically to Kenamar, which is in the east, so it's like a 5-hour drive. And then the donor messaged me and said they were really unhappy because we didn't send the photos in a timely manner. The team that we sent them to doesn't have a smartphone, so I can't communicate with that team from the UK easily. And even if they did have a phone, you know, like, that's a lot of demand and a lot of time for you to get acknowledged on social media for sending essentially 12 jerseys, which is amazing that you've sent them, but that knock-on effect of what you're asking or what your donation, those extra costs and stuff is, you know, it adds up really quickly. And that kind of, it's a bit of NGO jargon, but that money is like unrestricted money. If you had a donor that was willing to give you unrestricted funds and trust that you're going to spend them in the right way, then that's the kind of cash that you need. And again, one of the problems in Sierra Leone is because there's this perception of this like West African country that's really corrupt, and there's, you know, loads of people won't travel here or anything like that because they've never been here. It's super friendly, you know, it's really, there's a lot of poverty, but, you know, I feel safer here than I do walking home from the bus, like in Brixton, like. And yeah, that kind of perception of, well, I'm not going to give any unrestricted cash, even if it's £100, because someone's going to, like, it's going to be corrupt or someone's going to spend it in the wrong way. And you're like, well, yeah, of course that could happen. But also then, how do you think stuff happens if that money's not available? And for me, that's really frustrating. You know, it's really frustrating.
My team are really, really, I mean, we're game for it, and we are not afraid. But I respect anyone that we are on the finish line. I respect him, and I don't normally neglect anyone. As long as you put on the cycling kit, we need to compete against each other. Like, sprinting, my idol is Petey Sagan. I love that man so much. Yeah, my first idol was once my friend, Mickey, was from Lunsar Cycling. But now we have dropped off. So Mickey inspired me to be a cyclist. But later, he cannot continue. And Mickey was once a sprinter. So by the time I come closer to cycling, I started shouting. So I cut across Peter Sagan. And I start following his move. Peter Sagan is a great rider. And I love him. Though he's not performing very good, because all about sports is a time. You cannot last forever. Everything is a season. You have your own season. But Peter Sagan is my idol.
My name is Christian, and I work for the Mike's Bikes Foundation. We've got 6 projects on the African continent. Sierra Leone is one of the countries that we've been supporting since 2016 with donated second-hand bicycles that get imported by local sister shops and then sold to recoup the shipping costs and cost of import. And it's really exciting to see how these bicycles have an impact on events like this one here in Sierra Leone and in other countries. So these bikes fill a gap between, well, expensive new bikes, if there are available at all, and really cheap new bikes, which you can find anywhere but are really not suitable for riding or racing, certainly. I had no idea what to expect before we came out, and we've been seeing photos and we read stories of the event, so it's humbling to see with how little resources an event of this magnitude is being pulled off here. So I think we're all super grateful to have a team car, to have support from sponsors, to have good bikes, and seeing, yeah, I think that already puts us in a head start compared to a lot of the other riders. A few exceptions, of course. Super exciting to see the team from Nigeria that is very well equipped and yeah, super fit. So that's what an experience.
My name is Miabaka, also known as Blackie. I'm the coach of the Pistop Lagos team from Nigeria. Oh, I've been a professional cyclist, an elite cyclist in Nigeria then. So after that, I went into coaching and became a coach. Yeah, they are all good riders. Though this is Africa, but we have riders who have, especially in Nigeria, we have riders who have all the skills you can get from anywhere. So they are completely professionals. These guys you see are the Pistop elite riders, are complete professionals, just like the Tour de France riders, you know, when it comes to skill and technical know-how about cycling. That is why you can see what they do in the race out there. We are able to take out the guy from US and her. Pistop is a body, like, is a community that takes cycling along with a restaurant. So, and again, it's almost like an NGO where they try to build young people to become professional riders. So in Pistop alone, we have about 50 riders, you know, trying to do cycling as a profession. So the ambition is to build young people, bring them out from the streets, take them out from gangs and all, then give them a livelihood through cycling, the sports of cycling. Okay, the biggest challenge for me, I believe, even the cycling, is for you to build it. They have to build the cycling in Africa. They have to build the cycling in Nigeria. If you can do well, you don't need to go to Europe. If I want a rider to go to Europe, yeah, they will pay him, let's say, $5,000. If they can pay the rider $5,000 in Nigeria, no, building the sport and in Africa, then the sports will go far. We don't really need to go to Europe, but for now, we need it because the sports is big there, not big in Africa. We don't really need an investment from like companies from Europe to come and sponsor a team in Africa. But if we have our home companies, we have different kinds of bodies that can sponsor the sports also. But we can't take it away from Europe because they have already built it, so we can partner with them to build the sports, to grow the sports.
The bike that I have now is a Cannondale Cat. It's 56. You can see that it's not my size. It's a bit too big for me. But the reason we brought this is it's a medium-sized bike which could fit a smaller rider or a bigger rider, since I'm going to leave it here for the riders. Cannondale was generous enough to collaborate with Mike's Bikes and give us those bikes to give away at the end of this race. So they came here with us on one-way ticket, pretty much, yeah. My full name is Nathaniel Jonas Messler. Came here to race with Mike's Bikes. Yeah, I'm also originally from Africa, born and raised in Eritrea. I spent half of my life, or the majority of my youth life, in Switzerland, moved to the USA. I've only been to the USA the last 4 years now. So it's really exciting for me to just like go full circle through cycling back where I'm originally from, because I was a cyclist in Eritrea, went to Europe with the ambition of to hopefully make it to the top in the UCI races, or like the UCI projects that they had in Switzerland. That didn't quite work out as I have imagined it, but I still get a good cycling career. I was racing on the elite and Conti level, and now I'm in the USA racing for Mike's Bikes, also like an elite low-level pro team. So yeah, I'm excited to be where I am now. At this point of my life, it's more like I tend to focus more on passing whatever experience I have and like trying to tweak the mistakes I've made, maybe that might prevent me from getting all the way to the top, coming with my background. And that focus tends to be here in Africa, where it all started for me. Yeah.
And now we're in the final day of the Tour de l'Ansar. Tell me about your experience and how it's been.
It's been quite an experience, isn't it? Riders here tends to be much stronger than what we have estimated coming here. The timing and organization could always be better, you know. But I think if we continue to just show up in this kind of races, maybe even with more people next time, and not necessarily just on the races, but also pre-race or post-race, spending time with the riders, just helping them on how to ride races and helping them how to like look after themselves in training, races, all that stuff, I think that could really push this country's sport forward, especially with the excitement that they have already.
All right, so my name is Mohamed Cisse, though I prefer to be called Mr. Cisse or Hammer. I'm a British-raised Sierra Leonean. I grew up in a mixture of Manchester, Wales, so that's what the accent's about, okay? So that's a good question. I know I got involved, I met Stylish at a charity ride in Sierra Leone, and then he told me about the Tour de l'Ansar, and this is around the same time that I launched my own brand, AfriCap, which produces cycling caps and bags made out of Ankara. And I was like, part of my brand is to support grassroots cycling initiatives in Salone, so it was a perfect match. I would use the word participating rather than racing, although gradually, day one was suffering, day two was managing, and today I did feel really good, actually. I was really enjoying myself.
Well, the challenge is we need to talk to the management for next year Tour de l'Ansar to help us with pumps and tubes with tires, right? That is the challenges. And also we need vehicle that will there behind us for water to help the riders so that they will not exhaust.
Okay, the next day, the Saturday, was a very, very, very bizarre day. In terms of bike racing, I don't think I've been at bike race that has got any more weird. Even yesterday's Brittany stage can't hold a candle to what happened on Saturday. Basically, the president came to town, the president of Sierra Leone, which was a far greater bit of pageantry than I thought it was going to be. And there's a sort of like a dirt track stadium in the middle of the town, and unfortunately our stage start was told that we were not able to get on the roads at all when the president was here. So instead we went to this rally, this political rally, for 4 hours in the midday sun, sheltering, you know, trying to get as much shelter as possible under anything they could find. And it was quite staggering to sort of witness before a bike race. I mean, how many bike races do you know where it's sort of taken over by a political rally? So Priya John Dede from the Nigerian team, he won all three jerseys, mainly because of his attacking racing and how many breakaways he was in. He won all three in a Pogačar style way. Priya was first, and then we had his teammate in second, and then Nate from Mike's Bikes was third, and they had a big The podiums are also quite amazing. We sort of had about 45 minutes of podium ceremony and dancing and traditional dancing and music. And it was a real party atmosphere, which in about 35 degrees was quite something. But yeah, it was a real beautiful end to the week, and so many fans out there to just watch it and sort of fascinated by the racing, and hopefully we'll play as many interviews as I got as possible, because they really fill in the gaps. I mean, I feel like I'm doing an all right job, but
You're doing a great
job. These interviews really fill in the gap in terms of you know, the atmosphere and what people, what the race means to people, because it means, and what Stylish means to people, because them and Stylish and the race, really, it means a lot to the town of Lunsar. And the main thing is, I mean, we learn immediately, like, you know, sure, kit plays a role here and equipment plays a role, but it really is, it's the money that's needed to run these races and to get the competition over. Because, I mean, in my opinion, and in a lot of the organizers' opinions, the only way you can develop, the only way you get better is by racing people who are better than you and by racing more often. And this is the only bike race of this size in Sierra Leone. And so, you know, having the ability and certainly having the funds to put on more races in the area and to expand the race to other parts of Sierra Leone really is crucial. Because as I said the other day, there's a wealth of talent here. There really is. And it's just the skills, you know, that you can't learn the natural aerobic ability that these guys have. You know, they're sports people. They've got unbelievable fitness. But it's the skills to learn, you know, how to race, when to attack, how to race together. They're the things that are lacking, and those are the things that improve riders and will improve cycling here, so that more people will want to come and race it.
Well, I know UCI has been, some of them have been following the Tour de Lunsar, and our goal is to reach the UCI standards wherein, you know, we can have continental teams from Sierra Leone that can be supported by different corporate companies and which can lead them to a better exposure. So our goal is to like reach the UCI level to see that cycling became top in Sierra Leone and West Africa at large. Because if you're looking at the West Africa cycling events, like we only see like Tour de Benin and Tour de Faso. But once you see like the English part of West Africa has bigger races like Sierra Leone, one, Nigeria, and Ghana, and many other countries in West Africa. So it's for me to see that happening, and UCI is having like a continental African, West African race is the biggest thing.
Well, listen, that really gave me the bug for, you know, wanting to go and visit some far-flung, off-the-beaten-track races. I'd love to experience a race in, well, any part of Africa. Lizzie, I mean, does that make you want to go out there? I mean, you actually might get a chance to race in Africa, hopefully, in a couple of years' time. But, yeah, how, off the back of that, I mean, is that something you'd like to be part of?
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing. It takes you back to kind of your roots of cycling and that thrill that you first get when you're riding a bike that sometimes you lose when you become a racer.
When it's a job.
It becomes your job. Exactly. And just the joy everybody on the ground is getting from this bike race is incredible. And I do wish that perhaps over in the European scene, we could take some of that and, you know, as Oscar said, inject just a couple of percentage of, you know, the enthusiasm there into the bike races over in Europe. And it's amazing that the opportunities that some people on the ground are managing to provide for so many people out there, and the dedication and effort that's being put in. It's a really beautiful thing. We've got Worlds out in Rwanda in 2025. This year was interesting, actually, following the Tour of Rwanda, because Chris Froome had an absolutely mighty breakaway day there that actually ended in, I think, two punctures and a crash. But I was actually following along on Twitter, looking at a lot of the race imagery. And because so many of our races are in Belgium, in France, in Spain, in Italy, we're so used to seeing the same thing over and over again. And when you see something different, it really triggers the imagination.
Where is Lizzie, before
sends you to a different place.
Where is the sort of furthest afield you've raced? Have you done any sort of races in Asia, for instance?
No, not yet. Not far, to be honest. In Europe, Czech Republic, but and then over in the US. Actually, you know, probably it's over in the US, but in Tour of the Gila in New Mexico.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that feels different.
Really interesting place to be. Very, very different vibe to anywhere else in the US. So that was probably the most interesting place that I've raced. We lived off burritos. Absolutely delicious burritos.
Yeah, I've been to that part of the world. And I love that sort of, you know, sort of Tex-Mex sort of kind of cooking down there. I do love that part of the world. It's beautiful. But I think, you know, after that Tour de Lanza, I did start thinking, oh, maybe we should try and, you know, do something on every continent, you know, maybe cover something. So I started looking up, you know, I've got a real interest in some of the Asian racers, sort of the Asian tour. I'd love to go to the tour.
I'll set up the one in Antarctica.
Yeah, absolutely. That as well. I mean, I'd love to, but I think Tour of Japan would be one that I would like to experience.
Yeah, I would love to race over in Japan. I mean, yeah, Japan's been on our hit list to visit for a long, long time.
Mine too,
and I thought,
yeah,
you know, well, I'll get to go there for the Olympics, hopefully, and I can go travelling afterwards. And that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, brilliant. Well, listen, well, I do. I mean, I hope. Tour de Lanza's got me really, really excited for the Worlds when they're out in Rwanda. And, well, I hope you get to experience that. I just think any race can be improved by, you know, some great drumming in the background. I think I did have the idea once.
A bit of dancing.
And dancing,
dancing,
yeah,
on the start line, I think, was the thing that really got me.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, I had an idea to sort of, you know, revamp the UK crit scene. Like, just, you know, the crit circuits you get that were, all of us have raced at those sort of dedicated circuits, like, you know, bring some music, you know, just make it more of a party when you go on a Tuesday night to have a race. I just think
a DJ on every corner.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing, you know. But look, feel free to steal my idea, because I've got no energy to do it. So all right, Lizzie, well, listen, great to speak to you, great to see you. I'm so pleased that you are back racing. How does the rest of the, well, how does the next part of the season pan out?
Well, I'm not sure, really. I have got this race in Belgium, Dvarsdor, Het Haagland this weekend coming up, and I'm training hard to try and get selection for the Giro and later the Tour de France. And obviously, there's only 7 spots, so I'll be doing everything I can, and hopefully you will see me at those races.
I hope we'll need another mug after that, won't we? Like, with your arms in the air so many times.
Be updated.
Yeah, we need that. Yeah. Brilliant. Excellent. Well, listen.
Fingers crossed.
Like I say, I am a Lizzie Banks collector. I've got one of your caps behind me, so I do need a mug. So, yeah, I'm going to collect all the Lizzie Banks.
You're halfway to being the second fan in the Lizzie Banks fan club.
I want to be the number one collector of Lizzie Banks memorabilia out there. Brilliant. Well, listen, Lizzie, thanks ever so much, and I will catch you next month.
Thanks, Tom, and thanks to Oscar Skarsbrook for all of your help on Tour de Lanza.
I should thank Oscar, because basically, Oscar, I sent him an email and he did the rest of the work. So, yeah, Oscar, thank you so much. It was great. And next time, maybe take me out with you. Yeah, maybe.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.